Episode number 30 of The Champion is brought to you by Stamps.com. We tell you guys about a lot of stuff we use here at Empty Set Entertainment. One of the best recommendations that we make to small business is check out Stamps.com. It makes all your mailing and shipping so convenient. It saves you time. It saves you money. You're actually buying official U.S. postage, and you're printing it right from your own printer. This is so Jetsons, it's hard to imagine his boy Elroy being any more teched out than you will be. Once you try it, you won't go back because you don't got to go to the post office anymore. Just use my last name, Sigler, to get a no-risk trial. There's nothing for you to lose. Plus, $110 in bonus goodies, including a digital scale that calculates exact postage for letters and packages, no guesswork, and up to 55 big ones in free postage. Over 500,000 small businesses are using Stamps.com. We're one of them. You should check it out. So remember, for this special offer, go to Stamps.com. Click on the microphone at the top of the homepage and type in Sigler. That is Stamps.com. Enter S-I-G-L-E-R. And now on with our story. Welcome to The Champion, book 5 in the Galactic Football League series. Written and performed by author Scott Sigler. The Champion is suitable for ages 12 and up and contains graphic on-field violence. This novel, along with the first 4 books in the GFL series, is available as a full-length, unabridged, digital audiobook download from Audible, iTunes, and Amazon. As an ebook for Kindle, iPhone, iPad, Android, or any EPUB-compatible device, and in paperback, The Champion is also available as a signed, numbered, limited edition hardcover while supplies last. To order any version, go to scottsigler.com/store. Junkies, we have arrived at The Champion, episode number 30. 30 episodes of The Champion have caressed your ear canals so far. Oh yeah. And after this episode, there's just 9 left, plus episode 40, which is a Q&A episode. We are rapidly coming to the conclusion of this beloved book 5 in the Galactic Football League series. Oh, if you got a truncated version of The Champion episode number 29, we had a lot of difficulty with that. We're still having difficulty with it. We got a problem we can't figure out. We did a whole Friday fix on it, which is up at scottsigler.com, explaining what we did and the frustrations we had not being able to figure this out. But if you only got 4 minutes of episode number 29, you need to go to scottsigler.com. Actually, physically go to that page, scroll down, find The Champion episode number 29. It's right there. It's free. It's got a link. You can play it from there. It's got a click here link. You can download it and put it into your iPod if you want the complete set. But that's how you go get that episode. So your RSS and iTunes, if that's bonked, your options are completely delete the feed and resubscribe to the feed and it should be okay. Or just go to the site for that one episode and episode 30 you're listening to now should be perfectly fine. A Real Girl and I just got back from L.A. where we shot a book trailer for Alive, my next novel, which is out July 14th. Mallory O'Meara produced. She has this cool Twitter handle, @Sexoskeleton. She works for our buddy Sultan, who runs the horror movie house Dark Dunes Productions. So we were in spooky good hands there. The trailer was directed by Jack Bennett, who is the director and producer of Bloodworks, a show over on the Nerdist channel. If you've heard of it and you like Anthrax, it's because it's got Scott Ian of Anthrax going around and checking out all the special effects shops in LA, seeing how they make all those splattery great moments in the movies. I'll tell you more about the trailer and the shoot after the episode. But for now, you can see pics of it over at Instagram.com/Scott Sigler. One more sponsor for this week's episode. Let me pay them bills, then we'll get you caught up on the story, and man, we'll get into it. Our second sponsor this week is none other than our buddies, the Bellorific company, ShipStation.com. When you are selling online, you know, getting those orders out the door, that can be a tough thing to do. You got orders coming in from different places, maybe Etsy, maybe Amazon, maybe eBay, maybe more, maybe your site, and then you got to fire them all out with, you know, they want it FedEx, they want it UPS, they want it USPS. I'm starting to have an aneurysm. Wait, what's that? Oh, we use ShipStation.com, so I don't have to have an aneurysm, because it brings in orders from all those different areas, consolidates them, puts the postage in, prints the label, ships it out with any of those systems that you need to use or whatever your customers want, then boom, you are done. You get access to deeply discounted USPS shipping rates, the same rates once reserved for Fortune 500 companies. That's why ShipStation has a 98% approval rating with its own customer base. Right now, you can try it for free. If you got a small business and you are shipping physical product, you're taking online orders, you're shipping physical product, you want to check this out. You get it free for 30 days. Oh, wait! Wait, there's more! You can get an additional month free only if you use my special offer code, Sigler. Yeah. So don't wait. Go to ShipStation.com. Click on that microphone at the top of the homepage and type in Sigler. That is ShipStation.com! Enter S-I-G-L-E-R. Previously on The Champion. In the last episode, the mole for the Zoroastrian Guild was uncovered. Now, Quentin has to deal with the fallout. He knows All-Pro offensive guard Michael Kimberlin and backup defensive lineman Jason Prochnow were involved as well. Quentin has to decide if he will turn them over to GFL Commissioner Rob Frost or if he'll keep the secret of two men who might be involved in terrorist acts that have killed thousands. And now, Episode 30 of The Champion.
You're crazy,
Jason Prochnow said.
You know that, right?
His massive arms were crossed on his massive chest. At 7 feet 8 inches tall, Prochnow was one of the few sentients that Quentin had to look up to. And at 612 pounds, the heavy G could probably snap Quentin like a twig. Quentin desperately wanted to believe Prochnow. Watching Yitzhak get hauled away, and his brave moment to take all the blame to protect whoever he was protecting, that had gutted Quentin. The guy was a terrorist. That should have made it easy to watch his demise, but it had not. If more teammates were taken away, it would be just as hard to handle. Maybe Quentin had imagined the emotional reactions of Kimberlin and Prochnow. Read into them, perhaps. Maybe the two had nothing to do with Yitzhak. Quentin's heart told him to think that way, but his gut said something else. Jason, stop lying, Quentin said. I know. Quentin didn't actually know. If he had, he might have already turned Prochnow and Kimberlin into Frost. But Quentin only had a hunch, and you didn't ruin a person on a hunch. Prochnow made a pfft noise and looked away.
Whatever. This is nuts. I don't have to put up with this crap just because a dainty little quarterback wants to start something.
And yet Prochnow made no move to leave. Quentin could see right through the lie, could spot the second-year player's tells. Prochnow was a bad actor, but at least he was better at it than Kimberlin. Mike sat on Quentin's couch, taking up most of it, head in his hands. He was a wreck. Not from fear for himself, although there was definitely some of that, but rather for Yitzhak.
You don't know what you've done, Quentin,
Mike said.
Me? I didn't do a damn thing. Zach's in the guild, Mike, and so are you. So is Jason.
Jason came forward, pointing a finger.
You keep shooting off your mouth, you little orphan, and you'll find out—
Stop it!
Kimberlin snapped. He raised his head, looked at Prochnow.
Quentin knows. It's too late to do anything about that.
Prochnow glared at Kimberlin.
Well, he sure knows now, doesn't he?
He returned to his spot on the wall and leaned back against it. Quentin's gut instincts were right. He wished they weren't. He hadn't been called orphan in years. The infinity symbol tattooed on Prochnow's forehead should have been a constant reminder of the man's true loyalties, but in seeing him every day, Quentin had visually tuned it out.
Zach was your teammate,
Prochnow said.
How could you rat him out?
I didn't rat out anyone, Quentin said. I had no idea who it was until Wycor turned on that device. He hacked into the touchback systems and accessed communication records or something like that. He figured it out from there.
Hacked in,
Prochnow said.
Any ship this big has secure systems, Barnes. I'm not buying it.
The touchback is old and so is its hardware, Quentin said. Wycor told me he could have taken over internal systems if he wanted to. I don't know the details, Jason, and don't try to blame me for any of this. I'm not in the ZG. You are. All three of you are.
Were,
Kimberlyn said.
Past tense, Quentin. You have no idea what you've done.
You can go ahead and stop repeating that, Quentin said. I'm not the one that helped start a goddamn uprising in Bord.
Kimberlyn's face clouded over with rage. He stood up so quickly the entire couch shot away from him, tumbling across the floor like it had been tossed by a tornado. 8 feet of heavy G muscle eyed up Quentin.
Zack tried to stop the uprising,
Kimberlyn said.
But you didn't bother to talk to him before you ratted him out.
Tried to stop it? What kind of crap was Mike trying to pull?
I didn't rat him out, Quentin said. Yolanda didn't even know who was sending the messages. We had no idea until Wycor pinged that device.
Procnow made that sound again.
Yeah, but you knew someone was sending signals, right? You knew one of your teammates was gonna hang, and you still helped that little purple bitch.
Quentin pointed at him.
I don't need your racist crap right now, Jason. You got it?
The defensive lineman pursed his lips, stared back with disgust, if not outright hatred. Quentin turned back to Kimberlyn.
You said you were in the ZG. What the hell does that mean?
Kimberlyn said nothing for a moment. He turned, picked up Quentin's couch with one hand, set it back in place, then sat on it.
I was in the guild for years,
he said.
So was Yitzhak. But we got out.
It had been heartbreaking to see Yitzhak taken away, but to finally hear this from Mike's mouth, from a man that Quentin respected, even idolized.
How could you, Mike? How could you join up with those butchers?
We joined because we wanted to end Kredorakian rule,
Kimberlyn said.
We thought it wasn't right to have one race controlling the others. That's not democracy, Quentin. It's totalitarianism.
This isn't a tutoring session, so spare me the civics lessons. Are you going to tell me that the only path to democracy is by killing civilians?
Whatever,
Procnow said.
Like the bats don't kill civilians. Maybe all your money made you forget where you come from, what it's like back in the nation.
As if Quentin could ever forget. He'd seen dozens of people cut down by the bats, sometimes for something as simple as not getting on the ground when asked. Asked just one time.
Oh, you do remember,
Procnow said.
Then maybe the question isn't why Mike was in the ZG. Maybe the question is why you're not. You don't give a damn about your people, do you, champ?
Procnow spoke with conviction and energy, but something about it rang hollow. Not false, exactly, but maybe not true enough.
My people never gave a damn about me, Quentin shot back. Because I was an orphan, as you just pointed out.
Bats kill orphans just like they kill everyone else,
Procnow said.
More of them, even. Orphan or confirmed, it doesn't really matter. The bats kill our people like they kill people everywhere they go.
Kimberlyn stood up again, slowly this time.
That's enough, Jason. Look, Quentin, Zack and I were in the ZG. Yes, we facilitated violent acts, but we attacked Kredorakians. I never attacked anything myself. I was just a go-between, shuttling information or other resources from one cell to another. Yitzhak recruited me when I was still in Tier 3. It paid well then. That's how he brought me in. But I quickly saw the bigger picture, the importance of true independence. The guild was always trying to snag someone early in hopes the player would make it to Tier 1 and get full diplomatic immunity. With me, that strategy worked.
Quentin remembered being bound hand and foot to a metal X, the bats asking him if he had involvement with the Zoroastrian Guild.
The league caught on to that, he said. They gave me a lie detector at the combine.
Prochnow raised his hand.
Same here. Easy test to beat, though, unless you have the pain tolerance of a 5-year-old.
Quentin ignored him.
Don't tell me you only attack bats, Mike. I watch the damn news. I've seen years of attacks on civilians. The Guild is a bunch of murderers. Which is exactly what the Kredorakians are. So why is one better than the other?
Kimberlin shook his head.
Not when Zack ran it. The Guild changed, Quentin. New people came in, took over. Things got bad.
The words danced in Quentin's head.
Wait a minute. Did you say when Zack ran it? Yitzhak Goldman was the leader of the Zoroastrian Guild?
A big chunk of it, yes,
Kimberlin said.
But like I told you, it changed. When Zack was in charge, we targeted only Kredorakian military installations. Garrisons, barracks, troop ships, that sort of thing.
He stared at the floor. As he spoke, his words gradually became fainter and fainter.
Then the new blood started coming in, around 2675. By 76, things got bad. The new guys weren't patriots or nationalists. They were thugs. Thugs with money to buy loyalty. They started pushing to add sympathizers to the list of targets.
Sympathizers? What do you mean?
Like the holy men,
Prochnow said.
Scumbags who win favor with the Kredorakians by helping them.
For that, at least, Quentin shared some of Prochnow's anger. Church leaders had embraced the Kredorakians, used the bats to eliminate rivals. Sometimes holy men curried favor with local garrisons by publicly telling people to do whatever the Kredorakians asked. Some religious leaders even went so far as to say the bats were a tool of High One himself, and that Kredorakian orders should be followed without question. Those people were traitors, Quentin knew. But to murder them for it?
It started with sympathizers, but the new blood quickly ramped up their rhetoric,
Kimberlin said.
They claimed any target, including civilians, was justified as long as the attack damaged the Kredorakian Empire. Zack tried to push back, tried to keep operations limited to military targets. The new blood then accused Zack of being a sympathizer, said that's why he wanted to keep the attack small. The two conflicting schools of thought turned into a genuine schism.
What's a schism?
A split,
Prochnow said.
Like when we were little kids and that group on Mason became the purest Orthodox church and Butcher Smith ordered them all dead, remember?
Quentin did. For much of his life, he thought that maybe his parents had fled because of Smith's pogrom.
So now instead of one group killing random people, you had two, Quentin said. Awesome.
Kimberlin shook his head.
No, we killed each other.
His voice was a husk, a dry leaf blowing on frozen ground. It held anguish, a deep pain that stabbed at the soul. Quentin's anger and frustration receded, tidal waves frozen just before the crash.
That guy you killed, Quentin said. The one you won't talk about. It was because of this schism?
Kimberlin nodded.
It was in a warehouse in Red Storm City. We were having a meeting to iron out the differences between the old guard, which I was a part of, and the new guys. One of the new guys, Farmar Lawazi, his name was, he brought a gun. He started shooting. I took a bullet in the arm, but I got to him.
Mike looked at his own hands, massive things as big as Quentin's head, flexed them in and out, in and out.
I hit him. I hit him so many times. I'm not sure which punch killed him, but I think it was one of the early ones.
Prochnow let out a long whistle.
Damn, Mike, That's hardcore.
Kimberlin moved his jaw side to side, gave his whole body a shake.
Anyway, that's what told me it was time to get out. They'll kill me if an easy opportunity comes up, but I'm not that important, and they won't go out of their way to get me. Zack, though, that's different. That device that beeped in his pocket, that let him talk to various cells. That's why he kept it for so long. Zack had informers in areas of the guild, and if he caught wind of an attack on civilians, he'd try to send out a counter message. The new blood runs the guild now, Quentin, and they wanted Zack gone. They wanted it bad.
Quentin felt a sinking sensation. The parade bombing. Zack was sitting in the same car I was. They were trying to kill him, not me. Kimberlin nodded.
Same thing with that fighter attack on the touchback. They wanted Zack gone.
And now he is,
Prognow said.
Thanks to you, Barnes.
Something about Prognow held Quentin's focus. Not him, exactly, but rather the dates involved.
I'm only 2 years older than you, Jason, Quentin said. So in 76, when Mike left, you were, what, 10 years old?
Prognow said nothing. He just stared back.
Mike, explain that, Quentin said. How can Prognow be a former member if he was 10 when you and Zack got out?
He wasn't in it then, obviously,
Kimberlin said.
The new blood recruited him as a paid courier, just like they did with me. Zack still has contacts in the ZG. Someone tipped him off about Jason. Zack talked to Jason about the big picture, and now Jason works with us.
Paid courier, Quentin said. So much for all that talk about rising up against the occupiers.
I have a family,
Prochnow said.
I have to provide for them. I can be patriotic and still get paid for it. I make league minimum, Barnes, not millions like you.
So much emphasis and intensity on the word minimum. Maybe Prognow's words rang hollow when he spoke of fighting the Kredorakians, but not when he spoke about his family, and not when he spoke about money.
So why didn't they just pay you to kill Zack, Jason? You could get to him any time, right?
Because I'm not a killer, Prognow said. Especially not for a guy like Zack, who's trying to fight back.
And they wouldn't ask him to do that,
Kimberlin said.
A Tier 1 player is probably the most valuable asset they can have. Either side, old blood or new, they wouldn't ask an active player to do anything that might get them kicked off the team or out of the league.
So Kimberlin was old blood, and Jason was, what, both? At any rate, neither of them were to be trusted.
I still don't understand the change, Quentin said. You said the schism happened within a year or so of the new blood coming in. If Zack was the leader of the guild, how did he lose control so fast?
Money,
Kimberlin said, as if that word explained all of the universe's unanswered questions.
The guild always had a decent amount of money. Donations from sentients who hated Kredorakian rule, mostly. But the new blood, the money they threw around, it changed everything. So much, and in untraceable formats.
Quentin felt a sudden chill in his chest.
Untraceable, he said. What do you mean, untraceable?
Gems, mostly,
Kimberlin said.
And precious metals. Highly valuable material that could be used anywhere in the galaxy to buy arms or equipment or to bribe officials.
Quentin felt weak, almost boneless, like he was cold, dead meat barely above the freezing point. His legs started to give out. He managed to turn so that he fell into his favorite chair. The sudden drop made one of the chair legs snap, left him sitting at an angle.
Q,
Kimberlin said.
Are you all right?
Quentin heard, but he didn't hear.
I won, he whispered. It can't be. Kimberlin leaned forward.
What is it, Q? Tell me.
Quentin blinked a few times. The room seemed to dematerialize around him.
Petra, he said. She came to me again, Mike. Through Bumblepuff, I mean. She said that the Abernesia had advanced agents in our galaxy. They tried to buy off Prawat with precious metals and gems.
Kimberlin stared. Then he, too, sat heavily, the couch groaning under his weight.
Jesus,
he said.
The Abernesia.
Mike didn't need to be told all the particulars. The look on his face made it clear. He'd put the pieces together and didn't like the end result. Prochnow looked from one to the other.
Petra? You mean like Petra Prawat? Are you kidding me? And what the hell is an Abernesia?
Quentin shook his head. He had to focus on one thing at a time.
Never mind. It doesn't matter right now. Look, this is a lot for me to process. This is all way more complicated than I thought.
It had seemed so cut and dried, but it wasn't. The new guild was bad. Did that mean the old guild was better because they fought against the new guild? Was Zack actually a good guy in all of this? Could someone who blew up buildings and ships even be a good guy? All of a sudden, right and wrong weren't quite so easy. Quentin felt drained. He was done with all of it and just wanted to think about something else.
You both need to leave.
Neither man did. They both stared at him, waiting for more.
Oh, right, Quentin said. I'm not telling anyone about this. Fro squashed the story. No one is going to know about Yitzhak's involvement in the Bord uprising, whatever that might have been. I'm not a cop, and I'm not a soldier. If you both promise me it's over, that you will never, ever communicate with the guild again, I'll let all of this go. I can't have your involvement screwing up our season. Give me your word, and we never have to talk about it again.
Kimberlin glanced at Prochnow. It was the look of an older man silently giving guidance to a younger one, Kimberlin urging Jason to accept the deal. Prochnow sighed and shook his head.
Yeah, okay,
he said.
Wasn't as if I was all that involved anyway. This whole schism thing happened when I was like 9 years old. I'd rather just play football.
Kimberlin looked at Quentin, his face earnest.
I promise, Q. I'm done with all of it.
Quentin pointed to the door.
Then both you get out of here. I just don't want to deal with this anymore.
The two linemen left. Quentin stared at his holotank for a little while. It was off, showing nothing but blank gray. He wondered if Becca had already shuttled down. He wanted her there with him, needed her, but things were broken between them. Since their talk at Oni, she'd avoided him completely. Maybe he would call her. Later, though, because he realized there was someone on board who probably needed a friend far more than he did. The rest of the team had shuttled down to Ionath hours ago. Quentin didn't feel like leaving. Not just yet. Too much to process. He just wanted to stay in the touchback for a while, have a couple of beers. And besides, he had company. Someone who felt the same way he did. Yolanda was sprawled out on Quentin's couch, a portrait of defeat. Her right hand covered her face as if it were a shield that might hide her from the galaxy. Her left hand held a mag can of Miller Lager. Quentin wondered if that was how he had looked shortly after the 84 playoffs, when he'd thought he was on his way to a Galaxy Bowl title but lost in the opening round against the Wabash Wolfpack. Quentin had never written a story, never been interested in being a journalist, and really had no idea what went into Yolanda's job. Nor did he have any idea of how writers defined success. There were awards, probably, and popularity,
but nothing as straightforward as a tournament bracket resulting in a clear-cut winner. What he could relate to, though, was seeing years of work vanish in an instant.
Yolanda, you want another?
I'm not some booze-swilling jock, Barnes, she said into her hand. A second beer isn't going to help my mood.
Maybe not, but it sure isn't going to hurt it.
Her hand slid down a little. She looked at him guardedly.
Okay, she said. One more. Thanks.
He walked to his tiny kitchen and came back with two more mag cans. He handed her one, then sat back down in his favorite chair. The leg was still broken, and he still sat at an angle. He would have to have Masal get that fixed. They opened their cans at the same time, with a hiss of inrushing air and the crackle of sudden frost. Yolanda sat up and took a sip.
That little scumbag, she said.
You mean Frost or Wycor?
Take your pick. They both screwed me over. You know what that story would have done for my career?
He was having a hard time thinking his own career was all that important, let alone hers. Sandoval, Zack, the Guild, Kimberlin and Prochnow's involvement in what Zack had or hadn't done, and, worst of all, seeing Petra's claims of Abernethy corruption all but confirmed by Kimberlin. The future invaders were using the Guild to drive wedges between governments and races alike.
I don't know, he said. Maybe there are some things more important than a news story, don't you think?
She paused mid-sip, lowered her can.
Okay, I guess that's fair, she said.
Whatever this does to the ZG, at least Goldman isn't using the GFL to help kill sentience. Quentin raised his beer.
And that is due to your work. Cheers.
She hesitated, then raised her own.
Cheers.
Yolanda was relaxing a little. That was good. She'd busted her butt on that story, and he had no end of respect for that. Still, if Kimberlin was telling the truth, Zack had been trying to stop attacks, not start them. Did that excuse what he'd done in the past? No, not really. But it made things damn complicated. The older Quentin got, it seemed, the more he learned that there were no easy answers, that black and white were thin strips bordering a wide swath of gray. The football field had rules. Life did not.
I wonder what'll happen with Zack.
Yolanda shrugged.
I don't know. Bad things happen on the regulator. I can't prove that, though. Frost has that ship locked up tight.
She took another sip, sagged deeper into the couch.
I worked so hard on this, she said. Now I've got nothing.
Quentin nodded, wishing he could help her in some way. When he lost a game, the only thing that made him feel better was winning the next one. She'd lost a major story. To get over it, he imagined she needed a new one that was just as big. Could he tell her about the schism in the Zoroastrian Guild? Infighting among that group would not only make a great story, it might be an early alert to what the Abernethy were doing. But if he told her about that, he would reveal that he knew more about the ZG than he had let on. He wished he could tell her about Jonathan Sandoval's blackmail, about the reporter's double life as a CMR spy. What a story that would be, probably as big as the ZG schism. Quentin took a long pull at his beer. As long as Sandoval was threatening to tell the CMR the actual size of the COQB, then Quentin couldn't... Sandoval. The CMR. Schism.
Barnes!
Her shout and a sensation of cold wetness spreading across his chest snapped him out of it. He'd spilled beer all down his chin and onto his shirt. He stood up, first thinking he had to grab a towel, then forgetting about it, in the same instant.
It will work. It will work.
An exclusive, he said. For you, the story, an exclusive on Jonathan.
He barely caught himself from saying the full name.
On John Tweedy?
No, forget that part. But an exclusive for you, and it's about sports, and I, and...
He was stammering, sloshing beer onto the floor. That was no way for a calculating leader to act. He took a deep breath, controlled his emotions, and embraced the calm.
"I have a story for you," he said. "About me, sorta, to replace the one Frost took."
She shook her head.
"My coverage of you on this trip didn't produce any news. I hate to tell you, but other than your quirky habit of throwing up all the time, all you do is focus on football. No disrespect intended, Barnes, but you're kind of boring."
"Not that," he said. "Something else, something really big. I need to get you some information, and I need to do it now. So I'm sorry, but..."
He gestured to the door with his beer hand, inadvertently spilling a little more.
"Do you mind taking the shuttle down on your own?"
She raised her eyebrows.
"Is this how football players usually console their buddies after a bad game?"
"Well, no, but it's all right," she said.
She stood, set her mag can on a side table.
"I'll go, and thank you for the beers. I can't wait to see what your story is, Barnes, but I have a feeling it's not quite as significant as you think."
Quentin fought to keep still until the door hissed shut behind her.
"Computer, tell Masal the efficient I want to see him in my quarters immediately."
"Right away, Quentin."
If Masal could get Quentin and the others all the way to the Portath Cloud and back without anyone knowing, the worker could assuredly set up a secret meeting on Ionath.
Oh, and computer?"
"Yes, Quentin."
"Is the regulator still in direct communication range?"
"That ship has not yet entered punch space. It is still in range."
"Get Frost on the line, immediately. Tell him it's urgent. Oh, and tell him he better take this call, because he owes me. Use those words exactly."
"Right away, Quentin."
All the pieces clicked, and they clicked hard. The commissioner wasn't the only one who could put a plan together. Quentin had team practice, sure, but things would be a little laid back during the bye week. He had enough time to make his plan happen.
And that was the Champion episode number 30. Things are getting a little bit heated, folks. What has Quentin got planned for Commissioner Rob Frost? Is he going to lay the smacketh down on the galaxy's tiniest commissioner? You will have to tune in next week to find out. Now, before the episode, I told you I would talk about the trailer for Alive. We shot it Thursday, April 2nd in Los Angeles at a place called Monk Space. I wrote the short screenplay for it, then handed that over to Mallory O'Meara, the producer, and Jack Bennett, the director. Basically, it's the opening scene of my next novel, Alive, book one of the Generations trilogy. That's out July 14th. If you haven't pre-ordered, just do it. Go to scottsigler.com/alive. Click on the vendor that you like the most over on the left. Pre-order a hardcover. Let's make a rush at those charts, people. Let's make that rush. So basically, this is the opening scene of Alive, but with a lot of accommodations made for budget. This was a low-budget, one-day shoot, and we tried to do the most we could in one day to get all the footage together. And now Jack gets to take that and cobble it all together. It was a fun day of shooting, but man, it's stressful because A and I know books. We know storytelling and the printed word. When it comes to movies, that is not our strong point. And so much of what you see in a movie that looks polished and pristine up on the screen or on your computer at home or on your cell phone, you know, if you could just pull that camera back a couple of feet, maybe even inches, you would see people like physically holding stuff up in crazy wiring setups, and it looks like a bad third grade play to get to that point where you can zoom in and you can see it just in the frame. Everything looks great. So, of course, we're watching on monitors, but every now and then you look over with your my iSpies and see what's going on. You're like, there's no way this is going to work out. This is crazy. And that's very stressful when you aren't a normal part of the magic of the movie biz. Also, you know, we've been pretty busy, and I really dropped the ball on this and not getting advanced approval for things like costuming and props. And I have talked about it. It's honestly completely my fault. There was stuff I just didn't ask the producer for because I was so swamped with Earthcore and other things. So we had some surprises, like we show up the day of the shoot, and I realize That's the first time I've ever seen the coffin, which is a featured part of this screenplay, featured part of this shoot. I had seen sketches and signed off on the general shape of it, and that was cool, but I hadn't asked for measurements, didn't know how long the darn thing was, how wide it was. I hadn't seen any work in progress pictures. I hadn't asked for any of that stuff, and it was so some things were surprising on the day of shooting. It was still being worked on. When we got there, they were still doing some work on it. So, you know, of course, we've only got the one day of shooting because it's the location is one of the big expenses. And you have to pay people to be there. So you try and cram all you can into one day. So if that coffin isn't done, you go to war with the army that you have. So when it got there, the artist was working his butt off on it, finishing it up, putting some few final touches on it. And any kind of prop like that, that's a feature point. You don't get to finish it off completely until it's in the shooting location. So that was also part of the situation. But it was super stressful. You know, you look at that, you're like, what do you mean it's not done? It's 10 o'clock in the morning. We start shooting in 30 minutes. How can it not be done? And they had this whole staggered setup where they're shooting certain scenes that they don't need that for and getting the actress into makeup. At any rate, it was a really stressful process to watch, even though I've been part of this before. This is our sixth trailer. It looks like they caught some really, really cool footage. They captured some cool stuff. He did a really good job with setting everything up, and the director of photography had great lighting, and some of the stuff we were watching on the monitors that was properly framed was just awesome. So we will see how it turns out. You know, this is all up to Jack at this point. He has to go now and edit all that footage and put together the best little trailer that he can. We had a young woman named Amber Marie Ammerheim. She played M. She really captured the essence of what we needed out of that part. Hopefully you guys would. I think she did a great job. She walked in, she's all soft-spoken, smiley, and polite, and very quiet person. And then acting! She started to act for all of us when the director said, act! And she did! And she rocked the crap out of it. So again, I don't know how it's going to turn out on the screen, but watching her performance was fantastic. So that was probably the highlight of the day. And this is our sixth book trailer, as I mentioned. And people still ask us, you know, new fans are coming in all the time. They're like, wait a minute, you're making a trailer for a book? Do people make trailers for books? Yes, people, I assure you, people make trailers for books. This is our sixth one. Hopefully it'll be the best yet. I love making some of the other trailers for the other books. And they're extremely helpful. It's, you know, it's one of those things where if you're going to make a cheap trailer for your book, I recommend you just don't do that at all. If it's just a floating book cover and some text and some, you know, royalty-free music in the background, no one's going to watch that. No one cares. No one's going to watch for more than 5 seconds and go, oh, that's a crappy trailer. But if you can put something captivating up on the screen that will get some viewers' attention and will hold even a smaller percentage of viewers' attention, you're going to hold them through to the end of the trailer so they can see it and get a feel for what the book is like, you can wind up getting some new fans and getting some sales. And that is the goal of it, is to generate more exposure for the book. The thing with book trailers, though, is, and if you guys have been listening to me for a while, you know this. If you're new, this is new info for you. It is an expensive process. It is the one area in book marketing where you can spend your money, and then the result of that money will still be working for you 5, 6, 7 years later. Almost everything in book marketing, in any kind of entertainment marketing for that matter, is you pay for it, the advertising's up for a week. You pay for the placement in the bookstore when the book comes out, that's up for a week. Then that's gone, and that money goes bye-bye forever. Book trailers, on the other hand, go on YouTube, go on Vimeo, go on our website, and they just sit there, and they keep collecting views for years. We put up the Infected trailer back in 2008, and now it's at like 250,000 views, and it still gets 50, 60, sometimes 100 views a day. Now, that doesn't always translate into book sales, of course, but think about this. Think about someone who is, say, 16 now. Someone who is 16 now, just becoming an avid reader, looking for really gritty horror novels. Maybe they got turned on by The Walking Dead. Like, I love this. I want to get some more of that scary stuff, some gory stuff. And they find the Infected trailer on YouTube, which looks just as minty fresh as it did the day that we put it out. That kid was 9. You know, that kid was 9 years old when the book came out. Probably not in a bookstore reading a book like Infected. So no other marketing for Infected could have possibly gotten this kid's attention for a book that, you know, isn't even on the shelves in a lot of bookstores anymore. Now they find it on YouTube. They can go grab the ebook, they can grab the audiobook, they can check it out. It just gives you a continuing shot at turning on new customers, new readers to your work. So we're big fans of the book trailer. Do they always turn out the way we want them? No, you know, but we're not able to drop a giant, this isn't big Hollywood. This isn't an Avengers trailer. You've got to be really strategic about what are we going to show on screen that's going to communicate what the book is about? How are we going to communicate that at a budget that we can afford? It's a big juggling act to get the most you can for the few dollars that you have up on that screen. So I think Jack's going to do really well with it. It should be out in about a month. The live trailer should be out probably sometime in May would be my guess. And we will definitely keep you informed. Of course, if you've been with us for a while, when we put out a book trailer, we're like, da 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 da. Those were trumpets, by the way. Da, 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 da. And we make a big deal and we put it out, try and drive up views so that other people on YouTube get exposed to it. But that's what we did this week. It was wicked fun. I'm feeling very good now that it's completely over. A Real Girl, as usual, was completely on point with everything on the set. Everybody was good on the set. Everybody. Honestly, the only person who was an idiot was me. I wasn't there, you know, just too busy with the deadline, wasn't paying attention to a lot of details. But it looks like everybody picked up my slack, and it looks like we're going to have a pretty cool product out. So we will see how that goes. That's it for this week. You guys, Champion episode 30. There's only 9 episodes left, plus the Q&A. Great time to turn your friends on to this book, or at least to get them onto The Rookie and tell them, well, you're going to be able to pound all 5 books all at once. So I will be back next week with The Champion episode number 31 as we're well into the single-digit countdown, and I will talk to you all real soon.
You have been listening to The Champion, book 5 in the Galactic Football League series, written and performed by author Scott Sigler, produced by A. Kovacs, and engineered by Steve Rickyberg. For more information on the author and for more free stories, go to scottsigler.com. Theme music is the song Heaven's a Lie by the band Lacuna Coil.